An Englishman wins the U.S. Open for the third time since World War II, and he does something that only Jack Nicklaus did, and that is Matthew Fitzpatrick. Welcome to Golf Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes along with Braxton Hunter, and what a U.S. Open it was. Matthew Fitzpatrick won the U.S. Amateur at Brookline, which is the country club just outside of Boston. He did that in 2013, and although the course had changed a little bit, he has the same success in winning the U.S. Open, and he does it in dramatic fashion. He shoots a 6-under par, and he held off Scottie Scheffler, who also got to 6-under par before faltering, and Will Zalatoris, who got to 6-under par before faltering. But what a great finish it was. And then Fitzpatrick hit a tremendous bunker shot on 18, which many compared to what Sandy Lyle did when he won the Masters back in the 1980s. A terrific shot, set up a par, and Zalatoris misses a 14-footer by about an inch. What an incredible finish it was. Braxton Hunter, your thoughts on Matthew Fitzpatrick holding on to win the U.S. Open?
I mean, what a great finish, Jimmy. I mean, you had Zalatoris again down the stretch just play phenomenally and have a really good chance to win a major, and Fitzpatrick's ball striking really the whole week, but especially on Sunday, given the conditions and the pressure of a major championship and just his composure. And I mean, admittedly so, after the round in the interview, he said probably one of the least favorite shots, or the one shot he wouldn't want to have down the stretch, would be a fairway bunker shot. Yeah. And he just, you know, hit one of the probably best shots in the history of the game. I mean, as we look back on it years from now, it's such a historical golf course and setting at a U.S. Open, and especially with all the stuff, I mean, floating around before with just kind of the division and the professional game as it is, and just to have that happen on Sunday, and just a great finish. It was really cool to watch and great for the game.
Fitzpatrick hit 17 of 18 greens on Sunday. He hit 11 fairways. Obviously missed on 18. I don't remember how close he was to the other fairways. One of them he missed so bad he actually had a good lie, but he had 11 fairways. He was the only one to hit the short 300-something-yard par, number 5 par 4, the only one to hit that green. He made birdie with the two-putt. And he just did what he needed to do. And I was very impressed with how he played, his composure, his ball striking. He looked so confident on the tee. He looked confident with about everything he did. And then, of course, to win it, he made a 48-foot birdie putt on number 13 after he'd bogeyed 10 and 11. He then made the 18-foot birdie on number 15. And as he said after the tournament, quote, "I could retire a happy man tomorrow." A man that would not retire happy right now would be Will Zalatoris. But Braxton, you got to be impressed with the way he played. And look, he didn't make that putt on 18, but I thought it was a terrific putt. It just didn't quite break as much as he thought.
No, and he hit it just the way he wanted to. He described that after the round, and when he looked at it when it was 6-5 feet from the hole, he thought he'd center cut it. So it was just one of those that didn't take the break like he thought it would. But, you know, you got to take confidence from the finishes he's had and having under that pressure to hit the putt like you want to. I mean, you cannot control the ball going in the hole. You know, there's stuff that happens that sometimes you may hit a bad putt and it goes in. And, you know, in his mind, he hit a phenomenal putt and it just barely grazed the edge. And there's two ways to look at it there. You know, you have the people that would say he's snake bit or kind of can't get over that hump of getting it done. And then there's the other side, which I kind of tend to be more in, that he's knocking at the door and continues to on a consistent basis. And eventually it's going to happen. It's going to be his day at some point.
I'm in that camp too. I mean, this guy's had six top tens and 9 majors. He is only the third player to finish second in the PGA and the U.S. Open in the same year. He is such a good ball striker. His putting Well, he made enough putts when he needed to for the most part, but I thought he was – I think he's a solid putter, maybe not a great putter. But my goodness, that he hit an iron shot on a par three that was a terrific shot. I just think he's too good of a player not to break through, Braxton.
Yeah, and also I'd say this, Jimmy. I think historically the best putters don't always win. I think, you know, to have the skill set he does aside from the putting, I mean, if he putts decent, it's almost like a Colin Morikawa in a sense. Like if Colin Morikawa just putts decent, you know, at that standard, then he's going to have a chance to win. If he has a good putting week, he wins. So it's just kind of the ball striking just puts you in the game so many times. And, you know, it can be a little bit sketchy. I mean, even Jordan Spieth, who's one of the best players, you know, history, kind of has that same thing. It's kind of a little bit shaky around kind of some of the short putts, and you just never kind of know what's going to happen. But there's so much there in Zalatoris's ball striking that just – he's going to get over that hump, in my opinion, pretty quick.
Also, with Fitzpatrick, so he is the second male to win the U.S. Amateur and the U.S. Open on the same course. He did it, of course, at the Country Club. Jack Nicklaus did it at Pebble Beach, 1961, the Amateur, 1972, the U.S. Open. Julie Inkster on the LPGA Tour, she won the Women's Amateur at Prairie Dunes in 72, and then the U.S. Women's Open in 2002. So, pretty strong right there. Here's something else, too, about Fitzpatrick I wanted to bring up to you. And I did not realize this, but over the last few years, this surprised me a little bit. He went from strokes gained around the green to a few years ago, 138, then to 97, then to 18, and then entering the final round, he was first in the U.S. Open. Strokes gained around the green. He also... when he chips around the green, he goes cross-handed. I don't see a lot of people doing that, Braxton.
No, I mean, the only one that I could think of that kind of comes to mind that toyed with that a little bit was Vijay Singh at the high level, and then also Chris Couch, another kind of journeyman pro that kind of used that to some success. And, you know, I think it shows maybe a little bit of, I won't say weakness in that part of the game, but you know, there's some, maybe a little bit of demons coming in a sense to have to maybe go down that road of trying to chip cross-handed. But I mean, he chipped one in and has chipped really well. And obviously with the stats don't lie, he's played well around the green. So you can't say that that's a bad thing, in my opinion.
11 of the last 14 U.S. Open winners it was their first major win. And that fits Fitzpatrick as well. By the way, I meant to mention this, our pro news and notes brought to you by Holston Hills Country Club. They've got memberships tailored to families, corporations, residents, non-residents. A membership at Holston Hills brings together families, friends, and colleagues for sport and kinship. It's a home of the Corn Ferry Tour event. You can find out more by going to holstonhills.com. I actually played that course yesterday. It's in great shape. So, Braxton, we had the three guys that were in contention, Scheffler, Fitzpatrick, and Zalatoris. Each of them got to 6-under and then fell off of that number. And then you had Fitzpatrick getting back to it. Scheffler started. He was on fire. He ended up birding, I think, four of his first six holes. But then I thought he really messed up on number 8, a reachable par 5. He left his approach short. It rolled down 40 yards. Then he hit it up on the green, and he spun it back again. And then when he hit it up there again, he made about an 8 to 10 footer for par. But he really should have birdied that hole. I thought that really hurt him a lot not to birdie what was a very birdieable hole.
Yeah, and I think, you know, he had the questionable stretch in the kind of mid part of the third round as well, that, you know, those add up at the end of the week, Jimmy. It just kind of, those shot here or there, you know, obviously only losing by one shot, it ends up being one of those things that I'm sure he's thinking a lot about or kind of talking about with his team today, that kind of, you know, just the small things that would have gotten him over the hump to have a chance to, to at least get in the playoff to have a chance to win, if not win outright.
With Zalatoris, and I think this underscores his ball striking, he was first in strokes gained with his approach. This is on the season. Sixth in greens in regulation, tied for eighth in fairway proximity, and then fourth on his approach from 200 yards. I think those are pretty strong numbers, Braxton.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why he's the number one player in the world. I mean, that's one of the things that puts you in contention all the time to have a chance to win.
John Rahm, unable to defend his title. I thought he made some tremendous saving putts on Saturday. Didn't putt as well on Sunday. Shot 74. He ended up, I thought that double bogey, I thought on Saturday on 18, I thought really hurt him. I was surprised. After three rounds, he was the guy I thought would probably win it. Were you surprised that Rahm struggled Sunday? Is that a yes?
Yeah, I think the struggle for me, Jimmy, was just how he finished the round on Saturday, number one, like having the double bogey on 18 when he got the lead outright. And then, you know, that golf course is so difficult, and getting off to kind of a shaky start, I think he didn't ball strike it the way he normally does to have the chance to kind of put himself in position to win. He had a lot of kind of sketchy approaches and got it a little bit too far away from the hole to have any birdie chances.
Yeah. All right. A couple of other notes there. Rory McIlroy had a chance. He just makes too many mistakes. He's got a lot of firepower, but he just too many bogeys or missed putts along the way. Interesting stat. I think I mentioned this one before. His first 25 majors, which was 2007 to 2014, four wins, seven top fives, 10 top tens. The last 7 years, 28 major starts, zero wins, seven top fives, 15 top tens. Have the majors gotten into Rory McIlroy's head?
I think they did for a while, Jimmy, but I think now he's kind of matured to a point where, and listening to him afterwards, I think he's in the correct headspace to be able to win one maybe pretty quick, maybe the next one to have a chance. I mean, he's putting himself in position to have a chance to win at a higher clip now than he was the last really probably 7 or 8 years. You know, after he won the PGA Championship at Valhalla, which was 2014, he's really not contended a whole lot at all. I mean, he's kind of had what we would call some backdoor top fives where he had a pretty good Sunday and kind of snuck up the leaderboard, and it's like a after story.
Masters.
Same thing this year at the Masters. But I think the difference is this year, to me, he's put himself in the conversation before then. Like, you know, and maybe changing the strategy just a little bit leading into – maybe not having to have such a big final round comeback. This week, the putts just didn't fall for the most part until the ball striking kind of let him down a little bit on Saturday, and then they all fell. So it was like when he hit it great, the putts didn't seem to fall, but then his scrambling on Saturday, you know, I think had he had a chance kind of down the stretch on Sunday, like at the very end, you look back to those saves he made on Saturday. You know, that was one of the things kind of floating in my head that had he won, you kind of go back to those, but he just didn't hit it close enough, often enough, and when he did, he didn't convert. So it's just kind of one of those things that happens at that level.
By the way, I meant to mention this. So Fitzpatrick wins the U.S. Open. His caddy, Billy Foster, has been a caddy for 40 years. Got his first major.
And obviously for some pretty dang good players going from Seve to, I know he caddied for Lee Westwood for a pretty good while, caddied for a couple other Europeans, caddied for Thomas Bjorn for a while, and then obviously got a pretty dang good bag with Fitzpatrick, and is, I'd say there's a good chance it might not be his only major with Matt Fitzpatrick, that's for sure.
Gosh, and I saw this picture of Fitzpatrick when he won the U.S. Amateur in 2013. He looked like he was 13.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And his brother looks like he's 8.
Yeah, that was so cool.
Are you kidding me? So, all right.
Stayed with the same family, too. I saw that story, and that was pretty cool. Like, just had that whole kind of vibe going. And he mentioned, he said, I'm undefeated at this golf course. So it's like, can we have another tournament here soon, please?
Bryson DeChambeau, I had predicted he wouldn't make the cut. Okay, he made the cut, but he shot 13 over par. He was 11 over on the weekend, never contended. And then Scott Stallings of Knoxville, he missed the cut. He was at plus 6. You had to shoot at plus 3 to make the cut. Phil Mickelson missed the cut. He was 11 over par. The purse, Fitzpatrick, $3.15 million. Second place, and there was a tie, paid $1.557 million. Not bad. Matsuyama jumped into fourth place with a strong final round, made $859,000. Rory McIlroy, Colin Morikawa, $675,000. That was what they were able to win. Okay, a couple of other pro notes. We've got the Corn Ferry Tour in Wichita. Interesting story. Norman Xiong, I think that's how you pronounce it, 26 under par. He shoots 66, 61, 64, 63. He was a Monday qualifier. The 254 is the second lowest score ever on the Corn Ferry Tour. The 26 under was 6 relative to par. Steven Yeager shot a 30 under par. That included a final round 58 a few years ago. Xiong was one shot off the course record on Sunday. The course record of 60. On his last hole, his tee shot out of bounds and made double bogey.
Yeah.
But, and when I read his story, it's amazing. A rookie on the Corn Ferry Tour in 2019, he missed 15 of 21 cuts. The second stage of qualifying on the Corn Ferry Tour, he tied for 69 out of 72. This guy was just playing horribly. And now he comes up and has a phenomenal tournament at Wichita, which, by the way, is one of the four original tour stops on this particular tour. It's just a great story to see this guy play that well.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those that I won't say goes unnoticed, but it's just kind of one of those stories that the tour kind of provides, like having that Monday qualifier that in a sense almost comes out of nowhere, has a career week, and he's set up to have a pretty good chance to have a PGA Tour card for this coming season. So, you know, he goes from, as you mentioned, almost finishing dead last at second stage of Q school to having a PGA Tour card in a short matter of time. And I think that just shows the depth in the professional game. It shows how good these guys really are. I think it shows that golf is really hard at certain times. Like you start doubting yourself, and all of a sudden, what is obviously a world-class player to be able to shoot those scores at a Corn Ferry event and win, that same guy can miss all the cuts almost and come in last at Q school, and probably, I wouldn't doubt if he considered quitting or kind of, you know, figuring out what he needed to do to have a chance to get back. So it's really cool to see those kind of stories.
Yeah, it is. LPGA Tour of the Meyer Classic at Belmont, Michigan. Jennifer Kupcho wins her second tournament of the season in a three-person playoff. I didn't see this, but she missed a 2-foot eagle putt, which would have won on the first hole. Then Leona McGuire, the only woman from Ireland to win on the LPGA Tour, missed a 3-footer on the second playoff hole for birdie, and so Kupcho wins it. She shot a career low 63 in the first round. She was 18 under par with McGuire. The other at 18 under, Kelly Korda, and that's another great story. She had a 3-putt on the first playoff hole, but Korda was out for 4 months. She had a blood clot in her left arm, so she was making only her second start. So in her first start, she tied for 8th 2 weeks ago at the Women's U.S. Open. And here she comes in and shoots 18 under in this event. Wow, that's pretty amazing to be off that long to have that kind of a situation with the blood clot and play that well your first 2 hours.
Yeah, and have to knock the rust off, obviously, pretty quick. I mean, good finish at the U.S. Women's Open, and then that finish this week, it'll – it'll lead her into what I would consider probably a really good chance to win the women's PGA championship that is this week. So that'll be, she'll be one of the favorites going into it, especially with the form last week and getting a couple of tournaments under her belt since the blood clot situation.
She is the defending champion in the women's PGA. Kupcho, by the way, won the initial Augusta National Women's Amateur. That was in 2019. And in this tournament in Michigan, younger sister Jessica Korda, as well as Lexi Thompson, tied for fifth at 16 under par. So some pretty darn good
a lot
play.
Of star power at the top of that leaderboard for the LPGA, for sure.
So how much do you think that can help in the popularity of the tour? I know that some have been bothered by it being dominated by South Koreans and foreign players.
Yeah, and I think it would have served it nicely if that had happened not the week the U.S. Open was, because there's just so much attention on the U.S. Open that it kind of takes away from that star power leaderboard. But I do believe that's what the LPGA kind of craves, is some good star power from, and it, I don't even think it has to be American, but just some good star power that people can get behind and kind of have a fandom for, I guess, in a sense. And I think that's what it needs.
All right. So we mentioned that the women's PGA is coming up. The next event on the PGA Tour, the Travelers at Cromwell, Connecticut. The Champions, the U.S. Senior Open in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And then on the European Tour, the BMW in Munich, Germany. All right, when we come back, we will have more. We've got our local news and notes coming your way. And then later on the show, we'll be joined by Scott Perkins of Willow Creek. With Braxton Hunter, I'm Jimmy Himes. You're listening to Golf Talk. Welcome back to Golf Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes, along with Braxton Hunter. Braxton Hunter is an instructor at Fairway Greens. He's a former winner. He was a Player of the Year and Teacher of the Year under the TGA. So let's get to our Knox Area Player of the Week. Our Knox Area Player of the Week brought to you by Donnie Dean Cosmetic Dentistry. Don't lose time on the golf course because of your bad crown. Go see Dr. Donnie Dean for your CEREC one-day crown and enjoy more time playing golf. All right, our Knox Area Player of the Week is Mike Goforth. He was a winner of the City Amateur. It was held at Whittle Springs. Excuse me, Mike shot a 66, 69, a 70. The par out there is 70, so that's 5 under par. And he beat Jay Wise, who's won it multiple times. Jay Wise was one stroke back at 4 under par. But our Knox Area Player of the Week is Mike Goforth. Congratulations on him winning the City Amateur. That used to be a tournament that attracted a lot of folks, didn't it, Bryce?
Yeah, and we were talking about it a little bit on the break, Jimmy. When I was kind of growing up and even kind of into my college time, that was one of the ones that a lot of us put on our calendar to play every year, just because it was at that time, a four-round tournament, mm-hmm. kind of coincide always with the U.S. Open week, Father's Day week. Right. I had the fortune to win it one year, and that was one of the highlights, honestly, of my amateur career. It was just a cool event to win. A lot of good players always played in it, and it's kind of, I won't say lost its luster a little bit, but just not the participation that it used to have kind of back in the day. So hopefully they can get a little bit more momentum and get more people to play. Congrats to Michael. Great play on I know the course, from what I've heard, has been playing pretty difficult because the greens are pretty small and very firm with the weather conditions we've had. So that was a good score by Michael, and obviously to beat Jay Wise, one of the best players in the history of our area as an amateur. Yep. And probably I've got to look up to see how many times he's won it. It's been a lot. He's won the City Amateur a ton of times, and good job by Michael to win.
Jay, Knoxville Hall of Famer. All right, let's get to our local news and notes brought to you by Three Ridges. Set in the shadows of the Great Smoky Mountains, Three Ridges Golf Course is one of Knoxville's premier public golf facilities. It challenges all ages and skill levels. Find out more by visiting knoxcounty.org. So we mentioned the Knox County, the City Amateur, the Tennessee Senior Amateur at Stonehenge. Bill Breen at Nashville won it over Lauren Personette from Mount Juliet in a four-hole playoff. He made a birdie on the fourth hole. Tying for third, Gibby Gilbert. That's the guy that was a former Tennessee golfer, right?
Correct, yep.
And then Cliff Krejci, who lives in Knoxville. He was at four over par. Mike Poe at four over par as well in this tournament. And then Walt Chapman didn't finish.
Yeah, he had an illness. I think he played, I want to say, four or five holes and wasn't feeling well. He had, and then obviously the heat those 2 days was excruciating, even up in Crossville. So he had to bow out. And good news is he's doing better now. So he's on the mend.
Good. All right. Knoxville Pro-Am Series. This was June the 6th at Sevierville, the Highlands course. Allie Knight with a 66. She was the low pro. First place team was Knight and Ricky Moore, who shot a 66. That's pretty good.
Yeah, really good. Go Ricky.
Ron Justice, a 77, and Cindy Powell, an 82. The second place team, there was a tie. It was with Knight's team. The leader of that team was Rick Wilson, who shot a 69. And then also tying for second with Knight, and the best player on that team was Neil Killen with a 69 as well. So congratulations to them. Also, the 20th Annual Willow Creek Invitational coming up. We'll visit with Scott Perkins about that in just a few minutes. The Jimmy Himes Kenny Withers Golf Challenge benefiting the Sertoma Center. The initial reports on what we raised were not exactly right. We have found out we raised more than we thought. So that is going to be close to $60,000 for that tournament. We'd never raised more than $47,000. So that's a pretty big jump.
That's awesome,
for us.
Jimmy.
So, yeah, thanks to the folks that participated and our sponsors. And again, it benefits the Sertoma Center, a great organization. So that number got a little bit higher than we had thought for a while. A T-March tournament is coming up. It's coming up pretty soon. It's going to be on a Friday. He's got a number of celebrity golfers that he's bringing in. The tournament's going to be at Avalon. And the way that works, it's in conjunction with the UT Alumni Office, and they're going to grant scholarships to the students that go to Austin East and to Fulton and to Central. So a really good cause. T. Martin, a part of that. So look forward to that. All right, let's jump to our golf tip. Our golf tip brought to you by Fairways and Greens. Practice made perfect. Now, Fairways and Greens, they can handle club fitting. They also have the top tracer to illustrate your distance, your apex, your curve, and you can play virtually on several world-famous courses. Call 777-GOLF, 777-4653. All right, Justin Thomas got a tough ruling on a shot, a drive he hit near a drainage ditch. It did not bother his swing, but it did his stance, apparently. He said that he could have lied, like most people on the tour do, and gotten a drop. So, and for those that didn't see it, you got the ball, and then there's a drainage ditch, and then his stance, and it's uneven. I mean, the ball, I believe, was below his feet, right?
Correct.
So that impacted it. The person that gave the ruling said that, well, it doesn't affect your swing. You can't get a drop. Would it have been okay for Justin Thomas to ask for a second rules official if he disagrees with the ruling?
I mean, in my opinion, yes, but I will say, number one, in his defense, he said that, I won't say in jest, but a little bit after he hit a poor shot. So, you know, did he get somewhat of a bad break on kind of where it ended up, and did it affect his stance and kind of the lie of the shot? Yes. Was he in the drain? Technically, in USGA terms, no. So, and he knows the USGA, I mean, that's who runs the US Open, and they run the rules of golf, them and the RNA. So his ruling that he got from rules official number one, USGA, wasn't going to be changed by USGA rules official number two. So I think he kind of understood the circumstance and didn't want to hold up play because he knew the answer he was going to get on the second opinion. In a PGA Tour event or something not run by the USGA, I think he would ask for a second ruling every time. And it is one of those things that's like the gray area. I mean, it was kind of, it was impeding his stance enough where, had it been me asking, or if he'd asked me if I was playing with him, I would have thought he could have gotten a drop. Like, it was enough in his way where it was in the way. Was he standing on the drain? No. Was his ball on the drain? No. And that's what the USGA would say. It's kind of a moot point. He has to hit it. It didn't affect his swing as far as like coming through and having a chance to hit the drain or injure himself or anything like that. So that's one of the, it's kind of, we've talked about rules a little bit before on here, and it's just kind of one of those that's enough gray where I think he alluded to a lot of people that would have just taken a drop and gone on and, you know, not thought a second thing about it. And he played by the rules almost to the nth degree there for sure.
Is it fair to assume that it's going to be a little bit damp around that drainage area? Because he hit a fat shot. You saw the...
Yeah, and I think that didn't help, obviously. I think it was more kind of the I think he probably let a little bit of the frustration of the bad, in his mind, quote-unquote, bad ruling get in his head and didn't commit to the shot and hit a poor one. And then, you know, we've all been, I won't say emotional, but kind of in that position where maybe golf doesn't make a poor golf shot doesn't always lend your best self coming out afterwards. Let's just say that. I think, you know, there's been a lot of times in history where a lot worse has happened than what he said about, you know, somebody might quote unquote cheat or, you know, use the rules to kind of bend it to their advantage. And it's one of those things that, to me, watching it, I think I would have granted him a drop, but I'm not a USGA rules official. Yeah. So it's just one of those things. They go by the book to the 25th degree. So it's just kind of one of those deals.
And that's a body that would never agree to lift, clean, and place.
No, never.
You would play. No. You could have 4 inches of mud on your ball. Hey, play it.
Yeah, they're playing
They don't believe in any.
They're playing it down almost no matter what in a USGA-run tournament for sure.
All right. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Scott Perkins. They've got the very successful Willow Creek Invitational coming up, the 20th annual. He will join us to talk about that with Braxton Hunter and Jimmy Himes. You're listening to Golf Talk. Welcome back to Golf Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes along with Braxton Hunter, instructor at Fairways and Greens. We've got some topics we want to touch on. Tell you what, before the week, I got to mention this one. Grayson Murray got a little bit frustrated during the course of the round. He made a quadruple bogey on a hole, and his putter somehow wound up in the weeds. I guess it's because he threw it.
Pretty violently,
yes.
Too.
And then a little while later on the 10th hole, a few holes later, he hooked a shot and decided it would be a good idea to snap his iron over his leg or over his knee or over his thigh, whichever. So anyway, kind of a spirited display of temper by one Grayson Murray.
Yeah, and it's kind of one of those two also, Jimmy, that kind of like we were talking about with Justin Thomas in a sense, golf. At that level in particular, when there's that much pressure put on you and kind of in that heat of the moment, your best self doesn't always come out. And he's pretty vocal on Twitter. You know, he went through some alcohol abuse and some kind of therapy.
He did.
Has kind of turned his life around in that regard, is back and healthy. And, you know, he made a tweet after that kind of showed that video of him breaking the club. And he said, "I will never apologize for wearing my emotions on my sleeve. The U.S. Opens are brutal. If this offends you, this is your problem." So it's kind of, it's one of those things. Wow. He kind of just owns it. Like, he knows that's how it kind of fiery and, you know, probably got fined for that, but doesn't care, but it's, he just kind of knows that's kind of how he plays his best golf in a sense and what fires him up to play good. So it's kind of not the way I do it personally, but kind of in his case, that probably works for him.
We're joined by somebody not nearly as fiery, and that is Scott Perkins at Willow Creek. Willow Creek Invitational is coming up, and Scott Perkins does a terrific job of running that tournament. Scott, how are you?
Good, Jimmy. Good, Braxton. How are you?
We're doing very well. Thank you for joining us. 20th annual Willow Creek Invitational coming up June 25 to 26. Tell us more.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's been 20 years. I've been doing it for 19 years, and it's grown over the years, and we get a great turnout, and it's a lot of fun. It's a great way for amateur golfers to test their skills, and at the same time, you know, the championship flight, they're competing for points. So, and also the senior flight. So there's events around the state that they can try to make some cup teams at the end of the year. And it's pretty cool. So, you know, we get a strong field because of that as well, too.
There's the opportunity to register tomorrow as well. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. They'll be open the next 2 days, Tuesday and Wednesday. You can call out to the pro shop. We can get you signed up over the phone. And, you know, we've got a good turnout so far. So it's, you know, we talked about the points and some of these. And the championship flight in the seniors is very competitive. But the regular flight's cool, too, because it gets flighted you know, they play the white tees, they play the middle tees out there, and gosh, they get, you know, 30 or 40 guys in that. We cut it into flights and gives everybody a chance of getting some of the prize money, too. So.
Scott, I just want to kind of shift it to the golf course for a second. You know, and dear to my heart, kind of another one of my second homes being working out there with you guys for 3 years and just being around that golf course, the course is in phenomenal shape. I mean, I played it a couple of weeks ago and just speak to, you know, Paul Hood and the staff there and kind of how good that place is for the amount of play, you guys get, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that because, you know, they do. Paul Hood's our superintendent. He's been there 25 years it's crazy. They, you know, over the years you figure out how many times, you know, extra fertilizing and peak times to do it. And the course is, like you said, it's in great shape, but it also gets it unbelievably good for this tournament. I mean, the greens right now are great. I mean, the fairways were fertilized a couple of weeks ago and they're just nice. I mean, everything about it right now and not every game plays the ball. Not every group of guys plays the ball down right now, but you know, we play the ball down out there lately and you just don't get many bad lies, even when you're in the rough. I appreciate saying that, Braxton. Paul does they do a great job.
And kind of talk a little bit about just the how to get in the tournament for people if there's still some spots available for what's the best way to reach out for that.
Man, just call the pro shop. 865-675-0100. You can call there anytime. I'm there a lot. We can take it over the phone. That's probably at this point the best way to do it, just to make sure that we get everything in. So, again, we'll be taking those for the next 2 days. It's a good field already, and there's still room in it, though.
Scott, can you tell us some of those that have already entered?
Let's see. In the championship, we get a few of the college guys around. That get in that. So it's a lot of the younger guys. There's normally one or two, you know, a handful of UT guys that get in it. And, you know, a lot of just college guys getting in rounds for the summer and good competitive rounds and competing for those points. The senior flight, man, there's a lot of big names locally. You know, we've got, I know one of the Galliers and Rogers and there's Poe and there's, you know, there's a bunch of guys in it in the senior flight that make it really competitive as well. So, you know, and we tell guys, too, that even if you're a senior and you're not necessarily want to get in that competitive flight, hey, still get in the regular flight. It's a lot of fun. Like I said, it's broken into flights and then just more chance of getting some prize money. So.
And you limit it to, what, 110 players? Is that right?
110. And yeah, we're getting close. I mean, we're probably in the 90s right now. So, you know, probably less than 20 spots left, but – you know, they can call in the next 2 days, and we can take care of that, no problem.
865-675-0100. Scott, anything else you want to add?
Hey, I appreciate you guys having me on, and enjoy listening to you guys. And, as you know, Brax, hope to see you a little bit more out there. Jimmy, I know we see you every now and then, too. So.
Well, we look forward to getting out there. And, Scott, thank you so much, and I hope you have a great tournament. I know you will, and I hope that you get that field full, which I'm sure you will as well. Thank you.
And I appreciate all the nice comments, guys. Thank you.
Thanks, Scott.
Scott Perkins with Willow Creek again for the 20th annual Willow Creek Invitational, 865-675-0100. And they limit it to 110 players. There's a championship flight, several other flights, a senior division as well that you can be involved with. So, and appropriately, our interview with Scott brought to you by Willow Creek Golf Course, one of the top public courses in East Tennessee. Willow Creek has hosted the Knoxville Open. It's hosted Tennessee State Open, U.S. Open qualifying as well. And as you heard the number to make that tee time, call 865-675-0100. Let's get to our topics. And our topics are brought to you by Sevierville Golf Course. At Sevierville Golf Course, it's got two of the best courses in the Smokies. It features the Highlands and the River Courses. They have hosted the state championships. They've hosted the South Atlantic Conference Championships. Give them a call at 865-429-4223 or visit SevierevilleGolfClub.com. All right, the LIV Tour. Greg Norman, the CEO of the LIV Tour, says that the tour is applying to get points awarded for the World Golf Ranking. Now, the board has eight members. One of those happens to be the commissioner of the PGA, Jay Monahan, who might be in a position to recuse himself if they have a vote on this. What are your thoughts on people on the LIV Tour getting points applied to their world ranking?
I mean, I think it's an interesting, I won't say development, but kind of it's something that could make this tour work or die, in my opinion. I mean, and it depends on how the major championships align with the world ranking system and with the LIV Tour players. So if they do get world ranking points for the LIV Tour, they still, in a sense, could qualify for the major championships. Those that haven't already got an exemption from a win, or, you know, in the Masters case, your past champions are historically invited until they're 65 years old. If they don't do world ranking points for the LIV Tour, does it end at some point? Like, do these players that, you know, play the, in the case of this year, the handful of tournaments, and then kind of ride off into the sunset? I mean,
not if they're getting $4 million to win it.
Yeah, so it's just kind of,
or $125 million or $200 million signing bonus,
I think. And that's the thing, like, and it's hard to sit here and talk, and I mean, I would consider us quote unquote normal people, like, we don't have
sometimes,
yeah, but I'm just saying, like, as far as, we don't have offers for millions of dollars to do anything. I mean, and it's hard to get in the mind space of a Dustin Johnson, who's made bukus of money playing golf, obviously, or for that matter, you know, on the other end of the spectrum on the LIV Tour situation, like a Rory McIlroy or Justin Thomas, who are, or John Rahm for that matter, who have made the same kind of bukus of money playing golf, and they're motivated somewhat by different stuff. Like Dustin Johnson, I mean, it's different for different people, and that's kind of, you can't sit here and maybe blame somebody for signing for $200 million to go play a exhibition match, is what it kind of felt like watching a little bit of the first one. And yeah, does that turn into world ranking points? It's like a new tour, like a DP World Tour that used to be the European. Like, do they kind of mesh all together and have co-sanctioned events, and they get into the majors again? Or are we seeing like the end of all the really good players or the best players in the world playing together? Like, that's the one thing kind of leading into the U.S. Open. It's like, this is kind of eerie. Like, are we going to see Dustin Johnson and Phil and DeChambeau and some of these guys that have defected, or are we going to see them play against, you know, Justin Thomas and Rory and, you know, your history tournaments? Like, is that going to happen again? Like, it's kind of weird. It's a weird division kind of time in that, to be honest.
So you get points by playing the European Tour, right?
Correct. Yeah. European, Asian, anything co-sanctioned with PGA Tour or the DP World Tour. So that goes to the Sunshine
Tour. Which is the same as the European Tour.
That's correct, yeah. Okay. And there's some in China. I think there's PGA Tour China. There's PGA Tour Latin America, the Canadian Tour. There's quite a different way, a lot of different ways to get world ranking points. Now, obviously, they're at a smaller level on some of the smaller tours, the PGA Tour and the European Tour, the DP World Tour now, have the most world ranking points of all. So it'll just be interesting to see if they grant them any, if it kind of has the same level as like a PGA Tour tournament, because that could change the ball game tremendously if that's the case. And these guys are getting millions of dollars just to go play before they even tee it up. So just interesting to see how it's going to play out.
Why wouldn't they get points? If you're giving them to the European Tour, if you get it on the Asian Tour, and I know it's not sanctioned, but you've still got some pretty quality golfers there.
Yeah, and some of the argument there is 54 holes, mm-hmm. no cut, so and limited field. So it depends on maybe how many end up in their quote-unquote full field, mm-hmm. and then do they make concessions to maybe go to 72 holes and maybe, I don't know, play not a shotgun. I mean, I don't know. It's just interesting in a sense to see how it's all going to play out. I mean, am I a big fan of it? No. I think it's a division that doesn't need to happen at a great point in our game right now. But at the same time, do you blame these people for taking $200 million? I mean, it's hard to put yourself in that position and say yes or no.
I would like to think that if I was a multi-millionaire, which a lot of them are, I would not take money from Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, correct. And that's why it's like hard for you and I to sit here and have this conversation about it, because it's like you ask somebody that's got $100, $200, $300 million, they're going to be like, nah, I'm good. Thank you.
If Russia and Vladimir Putin started a golf league, I'd like to think I wouldn't accept money.
Well, and they asked that. They actually asked that to
Brooks Koepka, wasn't it?
No, it was Lee Westwood and Poulter in their news conference, and both of them just kind of dismissed like they wouldn't answer the question. It was like, you're talking about a hypothetical. Like, I'm not answering that. So,
but there's
just
a
like,
point to be made with that
absolutely.
Question, too.
Oh, absolutely. No question.
That's, yeah. Like I said, I'd like to think I'd turn it down, but I'm not in that position either.
Exactly.
It's easy to say that.
It's easy to say no when you're not put in that position.
Yeah. So, by the way, the next LIV Tour, Portland, June 30th through July the 2nd. We'll see how they do there. Braxton Hunter, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it. We had a great U.S. Open. Enjoyed watching that as well. Thank you for listening. This has been Golf Talk.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.